asks questions that get the answers that I'm looking for, to get the truth more than anything else. What's really going on? Is that person who they say they are, or are they somebody who's just trying to manipulate and con?
Welcome to the Inspire to Thrive podcast. I'm your host, Phoebe Lay, and in each episode, I will be sharing with you insights from either an inspiring person or myself to help you thrive and shine online and in person. We talk about all things marketing, relationships, money, business, growth, mindset, and more. So thanks for tuning in, and I look forward to seeing you inspired to thrive. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Inspired to Thrive and Shine podcast. Today, I have the very pleasure of speaking with Alan Stevens, a renowned international profiler and communications specialist who is an expert in the art of reading people. With decades of experience, Alan has helped countless individuals and businesses understand the subtle cues that our faces and our body language reveal. And in the realms of dating, business, and personal relationships, the ability to understand someone's true intentions and thoughts as well as emotions is invaluable. So Alan's insights into facial profiling is going to help provide a deeper understanding of those around us, helping us build better connections, relationships, and avoid miscommunication, as well as enhancing both personal and professional interactions. Alan, welcome to the show. It's so good to have you on.
Oh, thanks very much for the invitation. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. It was very divine timing. I came across your newsletter, and in your newsletter, you were talking about a woman that was swept off her feet by a charming and attentive gentleman who ended up pretty much creating a lot of chaos in her life. Believe it or not, this happens more than you think. It's a societal problem, and it's something that we're here to discuss. So can you share with us, how did you first become interested in reading faces, and what led you to pursue this?
Well, pretty much because I was abysmal at it. I was terrible. I've been through a lot of broken relationships. I'd had business partners who emptied the bank out over the years. And it was after my second divorce, after I turned 50, I decided that I needed to read people in a much better way. But nothing gave me the edge that I needed to truly recognize somebody's personality the moment I met them. Because everything was based on spending time with somebody and getting to know them and doing it over a period of time. The problem with that is if they're gifted at conning people, whereas if I've got someone's personality before they actually speak to me, and then I watch the way in which they communicate with me, I can see, are they in tune with what I'm reading? Is there something that's out of place there? And if there is, then I can ask questions that get the answers that I'm looking for, to get the truth more than anything else. What's really going on? Is that person who they say they are, or are they somebody who's just trying to manipulate and con?
That would have obviously been invaluable. I'd love to know, what are some key facial features or indicators that someone is not who they say they are, that we can pay attention to, that will reveal a person's true intentions, especially in the context of business and relationships?
We've got 8 billion people on the planet, or close enough to it these days. There is no two people with the same story, no two people with the same personalities. That's why I no longer subscribe to systems where you put people in boxes. So I needed a better system, and that's why I started looking at reading faces in that process. There are so many different angles and directions in all of this. But how this works is, if you lift weights, you build muscles in your body. And everything we feel inside, we express outwardly. So while you're sitting, thinking, and concentrating, you're going to be pulling expressions over and over. So you're going to work the muscles in your face. So the ridges and crevices that we create in our face, the nurture traits, the ones that we create in response to our environment. So we look at that first of all. Then when we're talking to them, we've got the feedback from their body language and expressions, the micro, little twitches on the face, that then start to tell us, did we read them right? Is there something emotionally going on? And are they telling the truth? So when we put all of those four skills together, the facial features, the language we need to use with that particular person, the facial expressions and the body language, we have a full understanding of that person. We can pick their character up really fast. We got their personality to start with, and then we're looking for any anomalies that might be there. We're looking at traits. We're looking at expressions, body language. We're looking for them in clusters. We're looking to see if they're congruent with what we're talking about. Are they in context with what we're talking about? If you're talking to somebody and you're talking about a dear friend who's just gone through a breakup, for instance, and you see a little twitch of a smile on their face, you know straight away that they were happy that there's a breakup. But we don't know why. But by asking particular questions, we can then work out what reason is that that person's happy. It could be that they're not really so friendly with that person. They're happy they've had a bit of a kick in the backside, a bit of a wake-up call as far as that person might be concerned. It could be that you thought that their partner was a horrible person and they're finally free of that person. So the whole thing is don't assume things. But you just mentioned a moment ago where you've had that intuition. You've had a feeling that something was going on. We all have that. And what it usually is our unconscious mind talking to us. One of two reasons. One, they remind us of somebody that's done the wrong thing by us in the past. We create a self-fulfilling prophecy when we do that because we won't trust them. We'll pull back. We'll respond in a certain way. They will respond in response to that. And we say, oh, we were right. The other thing could be is that reason we pick something up is because what they were saying and the nonverbals don't match. You know, they're saying in a way in which we go, it sounds great, but something's wrong. That's our unconscious mind that has picked that information up and then passed it to our conscious mind. But the conscious mind's not smart enough to work it out. That's why the more that you understand someone's profile, you can stop and you go, okay, this is what I'm picking up. Which of their facial features, what traits are causing me to think that way? Or is it something that's to do with me? Because I've got what they call critical perception. Absolutely brilliant when it comes to looking at documents, finding errors in things, something on the wall, a picture that's slightly out of tilt by just 1 or 2 millimeters over 3 foot range, I can pick it up. But that trait is not good in relationships when things happen that aren't tangible. We assume something's going on and then I can build that up in my mind and cause problems. And I've been through 2 divorces, a lot of broken relationships. So I know the part that I played in those. That's not taking responsibility away from my partners. They had their part to play in that as well. But I would have been able to look at things differently if I'd had these skills back then. I would have looked at it and gone, right, is it me first of all? Yes, it is. Okay, do something about it. If it's not me, then okay, I can do something about that as well. I can step away or whatever. And so in relationships, when you first meet somebody for the first time, there's a lot of excitement. There's that, you know, feeling of, you know, especially if they're charming. This is my advice to all men and all women. When you're talking to somebody and they come across as charming, ask yourself, are they just charming you or are they just a charming person? If they are just charming you, that's the first point you got to start looking at. There could be a problem. If they're charming to everybody, if they treat the doorman the same way they treat their bosses and everything else, with the same, they might talk in different language, but they have the same respect, that person's fairly genuine. But when they talk down to certain people and they're trying to build you up on one side and they're putting other people down, something's going on. That's got to be a warning sign.
I absolutely agree. I do know that you talk about observing baseline behavior and recognizing micro expressions. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I'll give you an example. I had a receptionist at one of the medical outlets I go to. And when I got there one day, she pulled a phone out and asked me to have a look at the boyfriend that she was just started dating. And I asked her about a bit more about him. And I said, well, look, what are you looking for in your relationship first of all? And she told me that. Then I could look at whether his facial features were going to be supportive of that. But I also said, well, look, this is the way he will think and process. If he operates outside of that, then start asking questions. He ended up being an abuser. And she was lucky enough that it happened early because then that story I put out in the post and everything else, it talked about the gradual eroding of the self-esteem. She had some self-awareness up front. So when he started eroding it, it was obvious to her. She didn't get trapped into being dragged further into it. And that's where we need to be able to see the signs early. But we need to also know exactly what we're looking for. The reason that a lot of people find the wrong partner is because their own self-esteem issues as well, what they feel that they deserve. We've got this society where we talk about everyone being special, everybody deserving things and everything goes. But inside, there's so many people who don't. Because when it comes to profile, there's 4 major points. Everybody is suffering. Everybody's been insecure. Everybody wears a mask. Everybody pretends they're not wearing a mask. And on top of that, we are a combination of how we've decided to respond to all the events in our life. We are a combination of everything that's happened to us. That's why our face changes over time. Some people actually look like they get younger when they start to deal with the stuff in their life and they start to have more joy. I've got a friend of mine. She's got a photograph that she showed me 10 years earlier, and she looks 20 years younger than that photograph because of the change in her life and the new pathways she took. The face will give things away. I can look at you and know that you're somebody who likes to give to people very quickly. You give your time, your energy and everything else, which means you're going to be an easy mark for somebody who just wants support. I'll be talking to you about, instead of just giving that person a fish all the time, teach them how to fish, you know, help them, but guide them to be able to do things on their own, et cetera. That means that then you keep a lot of your energy yourself, you don't give it away to everybody else, because there are times when you'll end up short. So it's having the ability to be able to read their personality and know where the baseline is to start with. The abusers will work by three initials, CIA. C for charming, they'll charm you first of all. Then they'll isolate you from your family, your friends and everything else so that you become dependent on them. And that's when the abuse starts. And at the worst possible level, if you don't do something about it, they'll throw the extra letter in, which is K. And that's when people get killed.
This one goes
over the top. I always say to people, if somebody's really charming, they could be a really genuine person, but just be wary about that. Quite often it's a quiet person who doesn't know how to talk and everything else, doesn't have those skills. And quite often they're the ones that get looked up, who get missed altogether in a partnership. And it's the smooth talking con artist that people gravitate to. And that happens with so many women.
Yeah. And I think you also mentioned as well that we can detect fleeting signs of someone's hidden emotions, like a flash of anger or contempt. And that's very easy to conceal behind a charming exterior. And a lot of the time, women especially, we will tend to ignore that because we don't want to believe it's true. We want to see the person for the person that they're pretending to be. But these brief kind of involuntary expressions, they reveal true feelings that someone might mask.
Everybody wants to feel that they belong, that they contribute, that they're valued. And women in particular, if a man turns around and says, you're beautiful and everything goes, then wonderful, here's somebody who really appreciates me. But really, the response to hearing that from anybody should be, oh, thank you, that's nice. But I already know. Unless you work on yourself first of all and know your true value, and I guarantee there wouldn't be one person listening to this today who hasn't got a greater value than they think they've got. That's why I love sitting and talking about the Campfire Project. I get people pouring their heart out, telling me the stuff they've been through. And this has been going on for 6 years. And not once has anybody come away from those conversations without looking at themselves differently. And really, they're realizing they've got greater potential than what they thought in the first place. We need to build ourselves up in a knowledgeable way. Not just trying to, oh, I'm wonderful, look, I'll sit in front of the mirror and tell myself I'm wonderful and hope that that affirmation is going to work. Well, that's fine. You might do that for 5, 10, 15 minutes a day, but your unconscious mind's telling you for 24 hours a day that you're having yourself on. It's until we start to realize and our unconscious mind and conscious mind start to match each other, they come to alignment with each other, that we realize what our true values are. This is why helping people to understand their personalities, the upside of their traits, and the downside of their traits, and knowing why their buttons get pushed. So they can set their environment up. They can then look at the people around them and go, they may sound wonderful, but are they really wonderful? What's the difference in the what I'm reading here in their personality? And what's the difference in their response? The little micro expressions on the face, there's about 7 in total. Like the face can pull over, 3,000 expressions have actually mapped, but there's 7 that are universal. Doesn't matter if we've been blind from birth, whether we live in a capital city or a tribal village. If we feel anger, we're going to have anger on our face. If we feel contempt towards someone, we'll have a look of contempt on our face. But they happen in that moment. They're controlled by our unconscious mind. Something happens, something said, bang, the expression's there. Our conscious mind steps in and it's shut off. And they can be as fast as a fifth of a second down to 1/25th of a second. But the human eye is brilliant at being able to pick it up. And quite often, that's one of the things you'll have picked up when you went, something was wrong, but I don't know what. It'll be something like that you picked up, or the tone of voice, the way they've been carrying themselves, the way they've been talking, there's been a change. So it's changes that you need to start looking for. And that, especially the early parts of a relationship.
Right. That's very, very interesting. And I think that you've just given us the key to spotting things early in a relationship and being able to leave, and we can knock that back.
And that's it. It happens far too often. I was involved with a group in Sydney, the Zen Tea House Lounge, which is a group that works with domestic violence. And I was invited down to their awards night. A number of us were asked to light a candle for one of the women who were killed that year. Well, 78 candles sitting on a table is quite devastating. And that's both male and female partners. At the same time, as far as domestic violence goes, we've got for every 3 victims, one of them is a male. And so we know that the as you mentioned before, it's a societal problem. It's not a gender issue. And that's what we've got to
Absolutely.
start looking at, is to get away from the emotional side of it and going, okay, look for the facts that are in things, not the emotions. If I can put my emotions aside, understand the facts, the real statistics, what's happening and where it's happening, then I can do something about it. But everybody's running on their emotions. If we stopped and we looked at the facts, then we can go, okay, now where's the real truth here? I can now fix the problem. That was why Campfire Projects got both men and women in it. And the men and women come together shoulder to shoulder, looking at the problems, not looking at each other as the problem. But if you're able to look and understand your own personality, what part you play in things, what personality you got and why your buttons get pushed and everything else, then you can look at it and go, right, what's this deliberate by the other person? Or is this just something because of the difference in personalities? So is it something that I can then communicate with them and solve that issue? You have dramatic appreciation, which is a gift to be able to express yourself. With somebody with the opposite trait who has what I call aesthetic appreciation, they can't deal with that. If they're stressed, they want to really be left alone to fix the problem. If you ask them what's going on, they're going to withdraw. So then when you're feeling stressed and you're talking about your stuff, that's too much energy for them. But that's the personality style of the other person. We understand why, then we know how to talk to the trait, and therefore we can improve that situation. And that's the thing, is in any relationship you go into, not just how much attention is the person paying to you, but how much attention are they paying to understand you? If they're not paying as much attention to going out and enjoying life and everything else with you, if they're not paying as much in understanding who you are as a person, what's really important to you and everything else, they're not invested in the relationship. And by the way, while you're expecting them to do that, you need to be doing the same with them. It's a two-way street. And I know that in a lot of relationships, the men are being told, you're not measuring up. We got to do all this stuff. But then we turn around and our partners aren't doing the same. If you want a wonderful relationship, you need to be invested in the relationship, understanding them, but also protecting yourself at the same time, looking for what's not right, having discussions around that. Get them in the early stages, because once the isolation starts, too late, especially if it moves into the abuse after that very quickly. But if you get that up front, you've still got your power, confidence and everything else, and it's easier to be able to walk away, and you haven't invested too much time into it. They've invested a lot of time into it as well, a lot of conning, and so they're going to be angry when you walk away. So you need to do it sooner than later.
Absolutely. Acting on early warning signs can help people to walk away sooner and to not go through that isolation phase, which then leads to abuse. I want to talk about business and negotiations, because a lot of people end up being conned when they are about to maybe sign a contract or sign up to a program or someone's high-ticketed offer. And a lot of the time, people make decisions not based on research or testimonials, and it's based on emotion. And it's very easy to make a decision based on emotion and get it wrong, especially if the other person is very good at making you feel like they're going to give you something that potentially is too good to be true. What can people do in a business setting or in a negotiation setting to prevent that?
Well, first of all, as you said, impulse buying. Motivational seminars where you've got the speaker up the front and they're selling stuff at the back of the room.
Yeah.
How many people run to the back of the room and then the following day go, oh my God, what have I done? Because they've impulse bought. It always comes back to the person who's offering you a service. A mate of mine always talks about the ATM is equal to the ETM, or ETM equal to the ATM. The ATM being your money machine, your bank, et cetera, your bank account. The ETM is about the emotional outcome the person will get if you help them solve their problem, the amount of time you will save them, the amount of money that you save, or the money that they will make by using your services. You get those three together, it therefore means that you became a problem solver for the problem they had, and you remove their worry and stress. So these are 5 points that come into the sale. And this is the same if, when I talk about sales, getting our kids to eat their broccoli, their vegetables, et cetera, that's a sale. Finding a partner who is going to want to have you in their life for the rest of their life, that's a sale. Everything in life is a sale. So when I talk about sales, it's not just business, it's just life. And there's no such thing as a business relationship. Every relationship on the planet is human to human, not B2B.
B2B.
It's human to human. And so when you understand that, We therefore everything is a sale in the way we're doing it because we want to get that person to accept us, etc. Because people don't do business with people they know, like, and trust, or they have to because they're a monopoly. But outside of that, we have to trust the person. We have to build that relationship with them. So if the person who's selling to you isn't asking more questions than statements, as I say, we've got two eyes, two ears, and one mouth. Use them in that proportion. But when you're using your mouth, you ask every possible question you can. And when you've done that, there's one more question to ask. And it's pretty simple. And that is, from what you've been telling me, this is what I understand. Have I got it right? If you have, straight away, the person's going to appreciate the fact you've been listening and everything else. If they say no, that can even be better because now, instead of asking them questions, now you're in a conversation where they're correcting what where you've got it wrong. So now you can build that relationship even deeper again because the person then really knows that you're really concerned about them and what they're doing. So if somebody's selling to you, see if they're doing that. They should be asking you all the questions to fully understand what your situation is. And then instead of going, oh, I was going to sell you this in the first place and I'm going to still sell it to you, it's a case of, does that still fit them? What is the remedy? What's the service that that person really needs? The person is structuring the response around that. You can see that this is not something they tell everybody, but they're treating you as an individual and they're selling to your needs. Then the end result is they don't sell a damn thing, but you buy a hell of a lot because you buy them. You buy the trust that you have in them and you're buying the problem solving that they're going to give. But they haven't done a sale. They've just been problem solving all the way through it, showing you, you know, understanding you and showing you where the thing can be improved. And so just test anybody out who's selling you that. If they're on stage and they're treating you as if they are on stage and talking about how great their product and service and everything else is, as you said, testimonials. What track record have they got?
That's right.
I've got clients who are still doing testimonial videos more than a decade after I've worked with them because they're still getting results. I've had people that I've profiled tell me that, well, one guy in particular, undercover narcotics agent for 2 decades before he became a business coach. And when I profiled him, and by the way, from 5 photographs that he sent me, I sent him back a 45-minute audio. As he said, he'd used skills that he believed were 85 to 95% accurate in the past. As he said, if they hadn't been, he wouldn't be alive today because he needed those skills to read other people and understand himself as well. And what I put into that 45-minute audio, not only matched but nuanced everything he said about himself. So by having those sort of things to show people the results that others have got, it still doesn't tell that person that just because I've done this with all these other people, their situation will be so much different to what I have. Will that really fit them? So it's in that conversation and showing them where I have used it elsewhere in a similar type situation, the results those people got. Then they can make a decision based on facts, not just emotions, because the conversation is me asking questions more than I'm actually making statements.
Yeah, wow. That's amazing. What kind of advice would you give people that want to develop this skill in reading people better? Are there any books or resources? Do they need to memorize certain facial expressions? Is it something that takes years to develop?
No, it's actually, I would say that most of your listeners, most of the population, when we were first born, we were all expert profilers. We needed to be able to recognize facial features. We need to be able to recognize our family, our mums, our dads, our siblings, our friends, people that we should not be around as well. We also needed to pick up people's emotions. So young children are perfect profilers. It's only a small percentage of the population who find it difficult to recognize facial features and expressions. The rest of the population, perfect. Any parent who's listened to this who has young children, I'll ask you, how often do they push you to the edge but don't push you over the edge? They've read you. They know how far to take you when they're trying to get something out of you. They know how to play parent against each other. And so being able to understand that side of it and knowing how to talk to the child, it produces boundaries for the child so that now that kids need boundaries. They feel happier when they know exactly what their structure is. And so by reading them, we can do all that. But it's getting that baseline of somebody, understanding their personality, and then knowing how to talk on top of that to that person is extremely important. You know, you can look at somebody and know exactly how they buy. Are they buying on finance, et cetera? Are they buying on the service? Are they somebody who Yes, they have what I call credulity, will take things on at face value and then tomorrow have buyer's remorse and pull out the deal. And knowing how to make sure, even when they've said yes, by asking particular questions and making sure they fully understand it. So when they go home, we all have experts over the back fence. There's always somebody who will tell you, I could have done it better than that. I've got somebody who's better than that for you. And that's where a lot of buyer's remorse comes in. Well, if you've done your job right, you've really answered that person's questions, you've explained everything, you've made sure that you've talked to their traits, and you haven't missed anything.
There is a big difference, and I think you can definitely tell whether someone's genuine or not, whether they're actually genuinely caring and interested in your well-being and what you find interesting or what you like, versus if they are taking up dancing just to impress you, even though they don't even enjoy that dance or that style of dance, for example.
There's two reasons for it. One, they're using it to manipulate, or the other one is they just care so much about you that they're offering to do something they don't really want to do themselves because they hold you in such high esteem. It's recognizing the difference in which way it's actually going. That's the important side of it. There's always an intent behind everything we do. The thing is to be able to recognize what that intent is. If we can do that, then our relationships are so much better.
Yeah, totally agree.
See, if your partner says to you, and you want to go and see your friends, for instance, and they go, oh, I don't really like your friends, then it should be a case of, it's not a case of, oh, I won't go. It should be a case, then, well, I'd like to go and see them and that. I love you, but you don't have to come if you don't want to. And you leave that open to them. If they say, no, I don't want to go, then you go and enjoy yourself. Then what's their response when they do that? What's their response when you come back? Yes, they may want you to themselves because they're insecure. They just want that attention. They want that relationship. And that's from the innocent side of things. But how do they actually handle it when you do go and see your friends? You come back and you might say, oh, I had a great time. Everything else. Would have loved to have been there for you to be there and everything else. What's their response at that time? If it comes back, oh, I'm just glad you had a really good time, then this is somebody who's more confident in themselves. They realize that you need your space, they also need theirs. It's when one totally consumes, that's an issue. My second wife, she had a girlfriend, so we went out to meditation and other things. And I thought I was invited along to all those. One day she said to me, oh, I just wanted to get together with girlfriends. I forgot. When she came home, I'm sitting outside in the hammock having a beer and relaxing. And I said, how'd it go? Oh, I had a great time. Fantastic. No animosity, no up. I didn't feel like I had anything taken away from me. Or I was being put down, or I just realized that I cared enough about something she needed. Did I give her that space to go and, not trying to, it's not about giving the space, it's a matter of not obstructing her.
Yeah.
If she wanted to go out and she knew she could do that, she even wanted to go and talk to one of her old boyfriends to sort, clear a few things up. I went, okay, because I trusted it. How much does a partner trust you to live your life?
That's such a big one. I think there's a big difference between someone that trusts their partner and someone that's deeply insecure, that's narcissistic, that will assume that every interaction that you have with a male or even your ex-boyfriend that who's your friend is a threat, and they become very controlling, or they might not seem controlling at the time, but they can act very protective, and it might seem like it's a protection, but it's not. And that's something that I discovered after the fact as well, and through conversations, realizing that there was actually a lot of jealousy, there was actually a lot of contempt, and there was no trust. And I always felt in the relationship, why does it feel like I'm being watched? Or why does it feel like I constantly need to change the passcode on my phone?
Exactly. If you've got a feeling like that, you've got to ask yourself, where did that come from? Because you're already picking up the signs, but depending on how much you want that relationship to work, or the level of self-esteem you have around yourself and thinking you've got this great partner because you put them on a pedestal, then as soon as you've done that, you've created a problem.
That's right.
My second wife saw a portrait of this, it was a painting. Very gilded frame in a shop window. And it was a peasant guy reaching up to this goddess. And I thought, how many people, both male and female, could see themselves in that peasant and their partner, the goddess, and everything else? They put them on a pedestal, etc. Your partner should be able to walk side by side with you. Yes, there'll be times when they're under pressure and you have the gift, the skills to be able to help them. That's what a partnership's about. There's a give and take in that. But in that give and take, you're still peers. You're still walking together. But when one's in front and the other one's behind, and you've got to look at it the right way. It's like in tribal times, the men were always out in front of the women. It wasn't because the women weren't valuable. They were valuable, and the kids and everything, all their valuables, the wives, the kids and all the girls, and the men were out there putting themselves out to face the danger to protect their families. So it's looking at where it really is. They, in that tribal situation, the men and the women still worked shoulder to shoulder when they were dealing with the relationships, their families, the tribe. They worked together as a team. And that's the thing. Ask yourself, is this partner that you've got a team member? Do you have a team or not?
That's exactly right. I think the key is to be, I think it's called the sunk ship fallacy. And I think a lot of women in their 30s, well, I know I started to experience that even in my 20s, where I was like, well, I'm deeply invested now. I'm very emotionally invested. I've given him so much. I love this person so much. And it's very, very hard to walk away. And I've unfortunately been through this more than once, where I've known early on that it's not right, but I've stayed to try and make it work, to really just try and, I don't know, either fix the person or hope that things would change. And I think that's a really big one. It's knowing that it's okay to just to walk away and start again if they are not a team player, or even if they say we make the best team or we're a great team, but you're not feeling it, or there are warning signs and just all these signs, it's okay to walk away. It's actually a good thing to walk away and to start over, because the other side actually feels so good. I'm on the other side now. And I was saying to someone last night, actually, over a glass of wine, I said, it's unbelievable that when you're in a relationship, the other side seems really daunting. But once you get there, it's actually so good. There's so much freedom and opportunity. And a lot of people are really afraid of change.
So if you look at the relationship you've got and you feel that you need that relationship, something's wrong. If you want to be in a relationship, you know, again, I look and go, right, is it because I just want to be in a relationship? I want that company, et cetera, but I'm not going to die if I don't have it. If you feel that it's something I've got to have, then it becomes a need. It's not a want.
Yeah.
You know, any partner I've got, I want them to want to be there, not need to be there.
Yeah.
And if you got that, then we can talk as equals. Men and women will never be the same. We always bring a different thing to the table, but there's an equality in the differences that we bring to the table. Our partner is supposed to complement us, and we can complement them, not the one's dependent on the other one, or one's in charge or anything else. One's not the coach, and one's not the team type thing, following the apprentice. It's about a matter of times when your partner will be the teacher. There's times when you'll be the teacher. And if you're smart about it, you're a part-time teacher but a full-time learner.
Yeah.
You're always learning, you know, to solve a problem for somebody. I have to learn about them first. Learning always becomes before teaching.
Yeah.
And that's why listening to others. But if you're not quite sure about your relationship, you decide, oh, I'm going to go and talk to my friends, make sure that they're not bringing their baggage to the table. Because we know that in social media, the research is showing that when somebody has an issue and starts talking about it, the average response time for before someone jumps in and tries to fix the problem is 19 seconds.
Wow.
How can you get any information in 19 seconds? So what that person who's jumped in and responded, who's either taken offense to what you said or taken your side against the rest of the world, it's all about them. It's not about you.
Yeah.
They've responded because of what's inside them, not what's going on around you.
I think that is so crucial to understand. And for the listeners, I really hope that this resonates and that you guys are getting something, because there's so much value in this conversation. And I'm getting so much value in this conversation right now. I mean, what you've just said is exactly what happened to me in one of the times when I returned. I remember the narcissist's new supply, which was actually a male. It was actually someone that is now his new supply. Funnily enough, it's not always romantic. And he was telling me to get back with my ex-boyfriend at the time, like we were on and off. And he was telling me to get back with him because he thought in his mind it was the perfect relationship, because he was going through his own thing in his relationship. And he was projecting like no tomorrow. And I was taking that on as advice. And I look back at who I was then and who I am now. And I think I encourage everybody to not take advice from others. It's good to offload and it's good to talk, but I think deep down we all know. I think we all have this inner understanding and knowing what's right for us and what's real and what's not. We just got to really trust ourselves.
That's it. Well, one of the things, if I sit down with somebody and I started to talk about issues that were affecting me, I expect them to one, listen, two, ask questions. The moment they start making statements, did I ask them for their advice? No, I didn't. So I wanted to get something out. By voicing it, I could actually work through it. That's why in the Campfire Project, we've had over 600 hours of conversations where people come in and tell the stories that they've never been able to tell other people in their life, not their families, their partners, their psychologists, counselors, psychiatrists. And in that, we've had all genders, all religions, cultures, et cetera, in there, but no bigotry, sexism, or racism in 600 hours of conversations. We've had nobody disrespectful to anybody else. And people tell their stories. And for me to get them to open up, that's where the profiling, being able to read the person, really helped, because I could build that relationship with them really quickly. Next thing you know, we're recording the call and they're talking about their life history, what they've been through, et cetera. And quite often, story they've never told anybody before. And for 45 minutes, I don't say another word, because I've asked them, I've introduced them as if we've got an audience. I then say, okay, well, this is what's happened in your life. Tell us where it all started for you. Tell us your story. Take us through your journey. And I shut up. And that could, 45, 50 minutes later. And these are people who said, oh, I don't think I'll have much to say. And almost an hour later, they're still talking. That's because I've listened. I haven't interjected. I haven't asked a lot of questions or tried to steer it where I thought it should go. I've allowed that space, just created the space so that they could give themselves permission to tell their story. And their conscious mind starts listening to their unconscious mind, because the unconscious mind steers it, is where it's going, and the conscious mind just follows it. And they get their own therapy in the process. And at the end of it, people have said, that's the best therapy I've ever had. And I go, well, if you want to thank the therapist, they go to open their mouth. I said, get off the call, go look in the mirror and say thank you, because you finally started listening to yourself.
That's right.
And that's the thing, the best thing you can do for somebody if they're going through tough times and you are a friend of theirs, sit there and just hold their space. Sit there and go, okay, just tell me, what you're feeling and everything else, and zip it. Go, let them get it out, and then ask them questions around that and let that person guide themselves through it, because everybody knows their own truth. They know their own answers at an unconscious level. And sometimes it just takes that person, like, are you okay, Day? It's just not, people go, but how do I respond if they say no? Shut up, sit down, and hold their space. Simple. You don't have to do any more than that. You just have to show them that somebody cares, that somebody's actually listening to them. And while they're doing that, quite often they go, oh, now I know what to do.
Yeah.
And they say, thank you. And you go, what did I do? You did a lot. You just held their space. That's the important thing. So if anybody cares about their friends, hold their space, hold your tongue at the same time. Don't jump in and give advice, because it's coming from your experiences until you know everything. And even when I've asked that last question, from what I understand, this is what I got, but have I got it right? Then I'm waiting for that person to go, they want me advice from me. They have to ask for it, even after that period of time. I'm not going to jump in, because that'd be disrespectful. They've shared their story with me. For me to jump in with a statement straight away is totally disrespectful.
Yeah.
And so I just hang back and I go, wait for them to ask me. If they ask me for my advice, I say, well, look, I've been through something similar, and this is what I did back then. This is what worked for me. I've got no idea. I haven't been through something like that, but I was talking to somebody and they told me their story. Or have you tried thinking of it this way? Because again, that's another question that's coming from me.
Yeah.
And it gives them the opportunity to respond to that question, which means they can go into their own thoughts, into their own mind, and come up with their own answers.
Yeah, that's right.
Because nobody knows anybody better than that person knows themselves.
Alan, thank you so much for the conversation that we've had today. I hope that one day we get to sit around a campfire and share stories. And I'd love to include a link to what you do, all your work in our show notes so that people can get in touch with you. But before we wrap up, I'd like to ask you five rapid fire questions. Whatever the answer is at the top of your head, so the listeners get to know you a little bit more. All right, well, shall we? Let's
Go for
dive
it.
into it. So, first rapid fire question is, if there was one thing you cannot live a single day without, whether it's a physical object or something non-physical, what would it be?
Oh, it's just taking time out for myself, giving myself that bit of space away from everything else.
Yeah.
And I've got a partner, and they should need to understand that as well. They need to have that as well themselves.
Yeah, it's crucial. What or who inspires you to do what you do today, Ellen?
Well, it comes down to looking at, well, me in a lot of ways, because I looked at what all the disasters in my life, the things I could have done differently, and it just inspired me to change. But the best teachers I've had have been young children,
Mmm,
because
beautiful.
they're all bulletproof when they're, very young. There's so much that they haven't been told they can't do, so everything's a possibility to them.
Yeah. Alan, where do you see yourself in 5 years' time? What else do you want to have accomplished by then?
Well, my main focus at the moment is to have a bigger impact in the area I'm working at the moment. It is to create and train my competition. And by that, I mean that, because everyone says, train your competition. Well, there are other profilers out there, but I see them as all strategic alliances. I've got a joint ventures with a lot of them, because everybody brings something else to the table. We enrich what we provide to other people when we combine it with other professionals around us. But my competition is anybody in the professional services industry, coaching industries, teachers, et cetera, college lecturers, et cetera. It's to train them with my skills and then build courses that they can then go out and deliver that incorporate what I teach plus what they work in to become the leaders in their field. If I do that, I can get out to a lot more people worldwide. It's duplicating myself through other people. Well, the leader's job is to create their own competition. That is by raising other people up to do what they've been doing or can't do or don't want to do, but do it better than they've ever done in the first place. If they do that, we've moved ourselves away from a prison. We're able to walk out and go do something else ourselves, but we know somebody else is able to take that job on. If you're running a business, they talk about working on your business, not in your business. Well, unless you've got people in the business working in it, you can't work on it. So you've got to be able to raise people up. That's a major focus.
Wow. Yeah, absolutely. I think strategic alliances are fantastic. It's a great way to scale and fantastic way to grow your business. What is one big takeaway that you've had recently that has changed the way you see or the way you show up in the world?
Well, the first thing was to be prepared for anything that came up. And one of the things I realized, that it's a saying out of one of the coaches in UCLA in America, John Wooden, and he had said, the most important thing you'll ever learn is the next thing you learn after you think you know everything. But I also go by one of the Arabic sayings, which is, trust everybody, but lock up your camel at night. And so it's a case of, yes, I listen to everything that others are saying and take it all in, but then work at it, take the bits out that work for me, reject the parts that don't, add my own flavor to it. And I think it was Bruce Lee who had said that that was the best way to move forward and learn and grow. So always listen to everybody, but take your own counsel on it.
Yeah, totally agree. Alan, if you could leave the world with one message, what would that be?
Very much a case of treat others not as you would have them treat you. That's the golden rule. But the platinum rule is treat and communicate with others in the way that they would have you treat and communicate them to them. So being able to learn how to read other people, listen to them and talk to them in a way without making judgmental calls, but being able to use good judgment.
That's very, very good. Wow. Alan, thank you so much for all that you've given us today. I am feeling so inspired and I cannot wait to re-listen to this episode because there's so many golden nuggets and I appreciate your wisdom. I appreciate your
Thank
love and your care for people. It definitely shows. And to all the listeners, thank you for listening today as well and for tuning into this episode. If you have enjoyed it, we appreciate your 5-star ratings and reviews on Apple and Spotify. And please share this with your friends and your family and anyone who will benefit from hearing this. And remember, I hope that you guys can rise up to thrive and shine because that is your birthright. Alan,
Excellent.
thank you so much.
You're welcome. One thing I will offer, I've got a free course, which I'll give you the link to that because your people can go and try that. There's a couple of traits they can go out and test for themselves. And the other thing is, if they want to pick up some tips and other things that answer your earlier question, if they sign up on my newsletter, then there's going to be regular tips going out, stories about the domestic violence, coercive control, people reading tips and other things as well. They'll be going out in the newsletter. We'll go on my, there's blogs on my website later on. But if they want to be able to get them, if there's anything there that they go, okay, I've heard you had a previous one, and they let me know, I can send them a copy of that as well.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Alan. We will definitely include that in the show notes. And yeah, like Alan said, please make sure to jump onto those resources because that will be so invaluable in anybody's walk and journey in life.
Excellent. Thank you very much for inviting me along today.
Thank you, Alan. And thank you so much to all the listeners. We'll see you guys soon. So thanks for tuning in, and I look forward to seeing you inspired to thrive.